It's the basement. Good morning, all, and welcome to another episode of It's Debatable, a platform of discussion for the students of international relations at the University of Malta. I'm Hilary Bruffa, and I'll be your host for the next half hour. Present in the studios with me are two students, Nicole Sherry and Luke Caruana. Today we'll be discussing climate change. Also present is Professor Ray Alul, whose research interests include atmospheric pollution and climate change. He also runs the Jordan Lighthouse in Gozo. We also have an academic advisor present, Dr. Carmen Samut, who organized the National Climate Change Symposium last year. Is global warming really a threat? Absolutely, respond most scientists, but they have only recently been able to approach a basic agreement about our changing climate. Before our two students get into the heat of the debate, I invite Dr. Samut to lay out the facts for us.
Traditionally, the study of international relations was mainly concerned with state interests and power, and with national security issues. In the post-Cold War era, the world has become aware of broader forms of global security threats that are linked to environmental degradation. The report of Gro Harlem Brundtland, published in 1987, alerted world leaders that there are no military solutions to the world's environmental security and proposed that sustainable development is the logical way forward. Since the end of the Cold War, green diplomacy has become central in international negotiations, and more recently, we have seen the appointment of climate change ambassadors. It was scientists who initially alerted us that the world climate was on the rise as far back as the 1950s and 60s. At first, few understood the seriousness of their findings. Initially, the political elite, including pundits, did not comprehend climate change science. To add insult to injury, there was a backlash by skeptics supported by corporate interests, who claimed that climate change is a natural phenomenon rather than being caused by human action, or rather inaction. These skeptics sowed international doubt on the level of urgency and the severity of the problem. For many decades, climate change scientists and environmentalists fought a lonely battle. The media were rather slow in picking up this slow unfolding issue. Hence, public awareness was slow and political responses were inadequate. Moreover, as observed by Anthony Giddens in his book Politics of Climate Change, in liberal democracies, politicians prefer popular short-term policies to long-term consistent policy that is necessary to build an international consensus. In climate change global summits that are held under the auspices of the United Nations, like those of Kyoto and Copenhagen, it was very clear that states are still putting national interest before global interests. And so scientists and civil society activists are often disappointed with the weak outcomes of these meetings. One of the biggest obstacles is the North-South divide, whereby poorer countries, which account for 90% of the future population growth, seek to develop their economies. Their development will pose further ecological threats, just when industrialized countries are becoming more sensitive of the need to change their patterns of production and consumption. There is ample North-South and South mistrust around the negotiation table, with developing countries claiming their priority is to eliminate poverty and raise their standards of living. This will definitely remain one of the key underlying issues in most discussions that are underway in preparation for future world conferences on climate change. Climate change is a formidable challenge for humanity. There needs to be ample trust-building and creative diplomacy in order to reach agreements that take into consideration the vulnerabilities of the developing world. Moreover, climate change policy needs to be mainstreamed, that is, to be built into every relevant aspect of public policy. Yet, top-down policies are not enough. The climate change challenge requires public awareness, as each and everyone needs to change our behavior for these policies to be effective.
Nicole, let's start with you. You're challenging the view that global warming is caused by human activity, or that solving the problem is within human control. What's your reasoning for this?
So climate does, in fact, change. Yet the case is that it is more induced by natural rather than man-made reasons. The fact is that there have been many instances in the previous periods where there was indeed the phenomenon of climate change, which was actually induced by nature. You can take, for instance, the formation of the Little Ice Age, or for that fact, the medieval warm period. These were all instances where man was not involved in the rise of climate change. In fact, where temperatures changed dramatically, and it was certainly not a result of man-made activities, with all the industrial activities and so on that we nowadays experience. And the fact is that nowadays we are experiencing such a scenario where the world temperature is indeed rising, and it has been doing so for the last 150 years.
Okay, thank you, Nicole. Well, Luke, on the other hand, you believe that solutions to the problems of climate change lie within human reach. Could you elaborate on this?
Of course. Within the last 200 years, the level of industrialization, housing, and interaction with our world has led to drastic differences than previous years. The amount of pollution emitted daily and several other factors, overpopulation. We have now come to see the world as something which we need to interact with in a symbiotic way. There are four solutions. We are an invading virus, if you will, and there's symbiosis, which is the mutual beneficial relationship between, which is the ultimate goal we seek to reach. There's destruction of the host, which is planet Earth, and destruction of the invading virus, which means us. Now, do I see human species as a threat to the Earth? I have to stand with Nicole on that respect, that I don't think that we as human beings will endanger the Earth in some respects. The Earth has seen far worse case scenarios than us. She mentioned the Ice Age, bipolar effects, changing of the polarities. The Earth will only need to shrug for the human race to become just an evolutionary cul-de-sac. I don't believe that. Yet, I do believe that we as human species are affecting some levels of the Earth. The ecosystem, for example, the dodo was one case in point, and plenty of other species, which we may not kill them all, but overhunting, deforestation, we all have causes, we all create effects, and it is a chain of being which we are tampering with. I believe that we are tampering too much with that. We need to stop. Some way or another, recognize the fact that, yes, global warming is a cause, it is an effect as well, and progress is up to us. In this book, the idea of sustainable development is even mocked at as being a case where the lung cancer is being stopped by just quitting smoking. We need to do further than that. We cannot rely merely on Kyoto conventions or Copenhagen or something more global, more personal and political needs to take place. That's what I believe.
Okay, thank you, Luke. Well, global warming has always been a heated debate, but we'll have to take a short break now. When we come back, we'll hear what the expert has to say. Don't go away.
I believe when I fall in love with you, we're going forever. I believe when I fall in love with you, we're going forever.
Welcome back to this fourth episode of It's Debatable, a platform of discussion for the students studying international relations here at the University of Malta. Today we're discussing climate change. Before we continue where we left off, I would like to introduce Professor Ray Alul. He has conducted several studies in the ozone concentration in the Mediterranean and studies of ships' emissions in the central Mediterranean, not to mention his studies of Mediterranean aerosol concentrations. Professor Alul clearly has a keen interest in Mediterranean weather. Welcome to the show, Professor. You've been listening to Nicole and Luke's debate. What is your expert advice on how we should be dealing with global warming?
Well, essentially, to reduce global warming, the only way to go is to reduce emissions, both locally and globally. To do that, we have to switch to alternative forms of transport, alternative forms of energy for heating and cooling, do a little bit more walking, perhaps, essentially. And reducing emissions will essentially cut down on the amount of CO2 and carbon dioxide, that is to say, and methane in the atmosphere, and help reduce the total amount. We are already way past carbon dioxide emissions in the last few hundred thousand years. So whether we like it or not, global warming is going to happen anyway. But if we try and restrict it to 2 or 3 degrees centigrade, that is perhaps manageable. If it goes to the maximum, that is to say, if we continue as we are now without reducing emissions, we are going to look at an increase of 5 to 6 degrees centigrade, which will be totally catastrophic, especially in view of the fact that most of the northern hemisphere is highly industrialized. Neolithic man was able to cope with climate change. The last ice age ended about 10,000 years ago, but that would not be the case with our civilization, because we now have trains, airports, etc., and all these would essentially disappear if the ice came as far down as the Alps. When I say the ice, we're talking about global warming, but global warming can also be preceded by an ice age as the ocean's currents and the meteorological parameters change. In the last year, we've seen the effect of the El Nino-La Nina effect in the South Pacific, which is an oscillation between Australia and South America. This has resulted in floods in Australia, floods and earthquakes in China, a very cold winter in Northern Europe, and storms in North America. These are all part of the same pattern. And these will continue to get worse and worse if we do nothing about it. Essentially, we have to reduce emissions.
Thank you, Professor. Could you tell us a bit about your own project in Gozo, monitoring the atmosphere using Jordan Lighthouse?
Well, we started this about 15 years ago in 1995. And at the time, we were looking for a place where local emissions were minimal or preferably non-existent, obviously a place with a bit of power and the phone line where we could put in instruments. We had borrowed instruments from our colleagues in Germany. We started with that. We spent about, as I say, almost 15 years working with those. We have found that the ozone concentration in the Mediterranean is extremely high, both due to industrial emissions, ships emissions, and partly local emissions. We established that this concentration is about five times higher than it was 100 years ago, which is essentially due to the industrialization of the Mediterranean. Now, in the last 2 years, we got about 500,000 from EU structural funds, 500,000 euros, that is, with which we've bought new equipment, which has just been installed. We're running this in at the moment. It's functioning, bar a few normal software problems, and we'll be monitoring things like ozone, sulfur dioxide, nitrogen oxides, aerosols, radioactivity, and so on. We also have obtained another 750,000 euros from the Italian Maltese Agreement, and we'll be starting to put in various instruments to monitor volcanic ash, something which affected most of Europe when the Iceland volcano went up last year, I think that was, not so very long ago, and which obviously has a very strong commercial impact. So we'll be one of the three or four places in Europe able to do that, essentially. And these are some very complex instruments that we're going to be putting in. They will form part of the observatory, essentially. All the data will be online and available to everybody, and we'll certainly be very happy to answer any questions and show people what we are doing at any time.
Thank you, Professor. Thank you for your time, and I wish you the best of luck with this project.
Thank you very much indeed.
Luke, how do you think that the situation will develop in the future?
Well, whether we recognize climate change or not, we are in motion. Now, nothing changes if nothing changes. Should we adopt a policy of sustainable development, we will be similar to the case where the smoker has cancer and he's quit smoking, but sorry, guy, that's too late. On the other hand, if we go on a more laissez-faire attitude, I suppose that we'll still end up pretty much bogus anyway. So, I'm not a politician, I'm allowed to bring bad news, and the news out there is not very happy at the moment. It's either we have a sustainable retreat, note my words carefully, I am saying a retreat, not a development. We have to somehow stop, we have to adapt, as O.E.O. Wilson said about a human nature being a tribal carnivore, at stake as a nation, or as a tribe, let's figure nation with tribe. There are some sacrifices which we need to make, or else we'll be like a canoe on the Niagara Falls, and the outcome is pretty obvious.
Okay, Luke, what do you think of the same future situation, Nicole?
I believe that the outcome is bleak. At the moment, we have seen the Copenhagen summit on climate change, and as you have seen yourselves, it was a failure. There were changes. They have agreed to limit the carbon emissions, yet it was only a voluntary agreement. And I believe that if China and India fail to agree with these measures, then all the measures that we have put forward, I don't know, for instance, in the UK, which is a promoter of such green policies, then there is no need for the UK or America, which was a global and has been a global powerhouse, an economic powerhouse, for us to put any limits there is no need for America and UK, which have been promoters in this instance for green policies, to put forward any green measures, which are in fact a hindrance for economic development. Because I believe that if India and China remain unhindered, then all that we have been putting forward will will in that case become void if China and India continue pursuing their development policies using fossil fuels.
Luke, what do you have to say to this?
Of course, China and India do seem to be big in geographical space and development at the moment. However, should we... Can I have this once again? Because you mentioned China and India, and it makes me think of Asia at the moment, and I'm thinking about the tsunamis in December. As I said before, should these countries remain to develop on an unprecedented levels, on a tiger economy scale, the standard of living and economic benefits, yes, they will be there, but at what cost? What we are doing here is being an economist, doing a cost-benefit analysis. Should I take this land to develop it, or shall I leave it fallow for other green purposes? Let's put it that way. The capitalist ideology which we are all imbibed in is obviously leading us to development. I mentioned it one time, dime a dozen, tribal carnivores, the alpha male complex of getting more for oneself. But ultimately, as I said before as well, the Earth will take care of us one way or another. It may take a lot of time, it may take a little time, but think of Haiti, think of Pompeii, think of the tsunami. It will all always happen, either way you like it or not. It's pretty much obvious at the moment. You can only take a look at the media and the news to prove my point. So, okay, they may stop. Should we stop? As Europe, we have been influential in several respects. Think of America, think of Africa. They all emerged out of Europe in one way or another, be it a good way or a bad way, of course. Can we be the pioneers in this technology, in this ideology? Yes, I believe we can. It's not an easy process, but if you think you're too small to make a difference, I believe you've never been in a room with a mosquito.
Well, I believe, Luke, that you are right. The Earth does take care of us, but there have been two recent scandals which have put much debate on whether this climate change is an actual fact true. I mean, if one takes, for instance, the two recent incidents of 2009, whereby the main precursor, the main pursuer of the global warming campaign, the University of East Anglia, which is in collaboration with the Climate Research Unit, actually dumped the original raw material which showed the rise in temperature for the last 150 years. They dumped it so that they can space on storage. So do tell me if this is correct in saying that climate change is becoming true when the original data we have is actually a revised information of this, that we have lost the data we had. And moreover, this revised information, which has been given to the International Panel on Climate Change, has in actual fact been dismissed. And there have been a case where emails were hacked from Professor Phil Jones, who is the figure in the leading warming campaign, which revealed that he had used statistical measures to tamper with the data he had to show that there was an actual increase in global temperature. So I do believe that the Earth does take care of us, but we don't have to tamper with facts so as to pursue these green policies, which I believe for the moment are not necessary if we are pursuing these tactical measures to suit our interests.
I see the tribal carnivore once again, but let's assume that such green policies are in a way not to the benefit of human race. Let's think of our monthly bills with oil and coal, whatever we base. Let's stick with oil for the moment. Should we take a green policy? Let's take the example of our monthly electricity bills. Should we take a policy of environmentalism with a little bit of solar panels in Malta rather than the personally speaking extravagant idea of wind turbines? Yes, there will be a substantial amount of effort, of expenses involved, but in the long run, both our environmental setup and our economic will be, to an extent, better. Do we want to feed our egos or do we want to feed our pockets? Now that's the question.
Okay, thank you, Luke. Nicole, do you have any last points you'd like to share with us?
The fact that I was mentioning before, the tampering with the data material, there is a reason to cause concern because the International Panel on Climate Change uses this material. So the question arises, have we been fed information which is actually tampered, which has made us believe that if we don't find a solution for climate change, the world is, strictly speaking, coming to an end with all the... The world will change with all the events which will happen. And now this is a cause for concern because the International Panel on Climate Change had indeed in 1995 claimed that the Earth's temperature was rising due to man-made activities, and all the world figures go to this panel and discuss any future policies which have to adapt for climate change. So the point I wish to put forward is, should we actually believe what the International Panel on Climate Change is saying when we know that the material it has is actually changed?
Okay, and Luke, do you have any closing points you'd like to share?
If it's a matter of belief, I suppose that like atheists and Christians, we can go on debating this ad nauseam. But given the general scenario, I think that it's time for us to really put on a sustainable retreat. A retreat, not a development. A wise retreat, like Napoleon versus General Winter. Such is the issue here.
Okay, thank you, Luke. That was Luke Caruana sharing his views on human intervention in the case of climate change. And I'd also like to thank today's other participant, Nicole Sherry, who was challenging this view. We'd also like to thank our academic advisor, Dr. Carmen Samut. And a special thank you to our guest, Professor Ray Elul, for his input. Thanks also are due to our radio technician, Mr. Kenneth Mitzi, and our coordinator, Ms. Joyce Gregg. To our dear listeners, I do hope you enjoyed today's program. You too can have your say on any of the topics debated. Go online to www.mirsa.org.mt. That's www.mirsa.org.mt. And click on It's Debatable. This program is produced by the Department of International Relations and the Malta International Relations Students Association. On behalf of the entire team, I, Hilary Bruffa, thank you for tuning in and hope you will join us next week. Until then, keep updated.